could discern that the boy lounging lazily was, in fact, readying himself for his upcoming trials by searching out every weak point and emotional lever he could find in his opponents. Which, of course, was exactly the reason Nick's body told the story of a boy blowing off his academic responsibilities. Thomas fought the urge to vomit while struggling to gulp down some air. His entire body was slick with sweat as he pressed his hand against the cold concrete of the training cell for support. He'd been down here for hours, and he would be here for hours more. Thomas had used his week off of training to think long and hard about new ways to apply his power in combat. He'd been unable to think of anything entirely new, but he had recalled a technique he'd tried and failed at when he was younger. Deciding to give it the old college try, Thomas had spent his first several days back in the gym making it work. He'd eventually succeeded, leaving him less than a week and a half to get this new strategy to a point where it was viable in combat. Coach George would have undoubtedly encouraged him to use his time more wisely, and Thomas would in no way have listened. He'd been beaten in the first trials of the year by being ill-prepared for what his fellow students would bring to bear. Now, things were different. Now, they'd had months upon months to see the capabilities of each person's power. Now, there were no surprises left. No surprises, except for what one could conjure in the scant 2 weeks afforded to them. Thomas finished catching his breath and stood up straight. A vibrant orange glow emanated from his hands. His days were short. It was time to train. 136. Roy caught the fist aimed at his head and twisted it to the right. Stella let out a muffled groan of pain as her shoulder was jerked and her body sent sprawling. Roy turned to intercept the next attacker and received a kick in the ribs from a highly dense foot. The only sound he could manage was a muffled cough as he doubled over, trying to catch his breath.
"Gotta be quicker than that,"
Violet scolded as she stepped back so he could recover.
"And here, I thought, chicks, Doug, lasting power,"
Roy wheezed out as his lungs did their best to recuperate.
"Real women need speed and longevity,"
Violet said, flashing him a smarmy grin of her own.
"Speaking of, how you holding up, Stella?"
"Arm is sore," Stella growled. "No worries, though. I'll get him back."
"Good,"
Violet said,
"because in 20 minutes, it's your turn."
"Fuck to the yes,"
Stella said, stretching her limbs as she finished standing. The three of them had been going for a few days like this, doing one-on-one fights at first, then progressing to two against one. They were each doing some exercises in their own time as well. At the end of the day, however, they all subscribed to the same mentality. The only way to prep for a fight is to fight. A lot.
"That's enough girl talk,"
Roy said, rearing up to his full height.
"I've still got 20 minutes left, and I want to see just how well you two can double-team a man."
"I swear, it's like he wants us to aim for the balls,"
Violet sighed, taking a stance and bracing herself.
"Well, let's be honest," Roy said. "With ones as big as mine, it's harder not to hit them."
Stella and Violet exchanged glances. After several days of Roy's banter, they were getting used to his thinly veiled attempts to rile them up so they'd come at him harder. That said, they were also very much beginning to enjoy when it was his turn to get attacked. Camille exhaled and shifted her position. The sun was just cresting over the horizon as she sat on the hill, knees situated on a soft yet durable blue mat. She was doing yoga, as she did most mornings, though this time she was doing it outside. She was near the edge of the campus, away from where most people traveled, but still within range of being discovered. That was the real point of today. To risk people seeing her. She wasn't indecent. She wore a baggy shirt over a sports bra and some cloth pants. She was just making strange motions with her body, and that was a little embarrassing. Camille didn't particularly like to be watched. She didn't like to stand out in the crowd. It was undoubtedly a survival mechanism left over from her years of abuse at the hands of neighborhood bullies who had hated her for being different. Camille inhaled and rotated her legs. None of that mattered anymore. She wasn't the weirdo of her school. She wasn't the outcast cowering behind the bushes, willing her pursuers to not find her. She wasn't helpless. Camille was a super. She'd owned that term for years now, and if she wanted to take it to the next level, that meant keeping her concentration in the face of distractions. A set of voices reached her ears from some distance away. They were getting closer. Soon, they'd come upon her doing her morning exercise. Her breath tried to catch in her throat, but Camille refused to let it. It was fine if people saw her. It was okay to be noticed. There was nothing wrong with being seen. She had to come to terms with that, because if it came to a point where she had to use her full potential in this test, people were going to notice the living crap out of her. And she had to push through that. She had to be strong. No matter what, she had to advance to the next year. She knew that he would advance. He would undoubtedly be here next year, fighting and training and laughing and growing. He would be one step closer to being a hero. And he would need someone to heal him. Camille exhaled as she lowered her hips and raised her shoulders. She heard the people walking by her, felt their eyes as they noticed the small, pale-haired girl stretching in the sunrise. She felt the blood rise in her cheeks, but otherwise showed no response. Soon, the voices passed, and Camille changed position again. He would be here next year, and he would unavoidably get himself into trouble. He would get hurt. So Camille and her power would be here too. That's all there was to it. 137. Shane knocked on Michael's door again. He and Chad waited patiently for a few moments before Shane turned around.
Still no answer.
I'm aware, Chad said.
That's weird, though, right? Michael has his crap, but the guy never flakes on training.
Chad shrugged with the casual apathy Shane had grown accustomed to.
Pressure makes some people better, and it makes some people break. Maybe he couldn't take it.
I guess. That just doesn't seem like him,
Shane said.
Yes, because Michael has shown such excellent coping mechanisms throughout the year, Chad replied.
Never this bad, though,
Shane pointed out.
That's why it is called escalation, Chad told him. Look, he isn't picking up his cell, and I can hear through the walls that he isn't in there. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and assume he's off doing some special training on his own. In the meantime, you and I have only a few days left.
Shane started to protest, then thought better of it. Michael had barely shown up for 3 days of training throughout the 2 weeks, and he'd been distracted each time. Shane considered Michael a friend, but whatever was going on, it was apparent Michael wasn't going to share. So Shane needed to focus on making sure he was at his peak when test time came.
Okay, Shane agreed. We'll try again tomorrow.
Vince released a blast of heat into the concrete wall, creating a focused pillar of flame between himself and the boundary. In the corner of the training room was an ever-growing pile of Sterno cans, adding an even more decrepit ambiance to the seared room. Vince had been training down here for most of his 2 weeks, stopping only for study, tests, food, and more fire. He'd worked hard with his heat, trying new blast patterns and range techniques. He'd focused on close combat as well, driving up the temperature around him to near intolerable levels for any human who passed through it. His body was sore, sweat poured from him constantly, and some of his muscles felt like a bat had been taken to them. Vince couldn't remember a time he'd felt better. He released the bolt of flame from the wall and cupped his hands. Between his palms, a fireball formed, swirling about until he threw his arms forward. The fireball launched into the wall and spread across it, leaving a swath of fresh scorches in its path. Vince paused to pick a new target area and realized that he was more or less out of clean space to hit. They were going to have to do a hell of a job fixing up this combat room. Then again, Vince had faith there was an efficient process in place for such things. Otherwise, there was no way this school could function with people like himself in it. He picked up a water bottle at his feet and took a deep drink. Tomorrow was his down day, the night of the festivities. The day after that was the exam. He still didn't feel ready, not completely, but Vince had been around the block enough times to know that he never would. He would do the best he could to prepare, and then things would just play out. He wouldn't know if he was ready or not until it was all over, because that's when the results would dictate the answer. In the meantime, Vince still had a few hours before dinner with Sasha. The air around him seemed to be rippling as the temperature was strong-armed upward. The water bottle at his feet began to melt into the gray stone floor. Vince trained his eyes on a heavily scorched section of wall. Well, if he couldn't measure his progress by marking, he'd have to measure it by melting. Vince stepped forward and let fly with everything he had. 138. Vince wandered into the common room to find Herschel and Alice already watching television on the couch. All three were clad in pajamas, though Alice's were a pink silk set, and Vince's were composed of a tank top and sweats. Herschel, on the other hand, was sporting an enormous t-shirt and a pair of workout shorts. It was definitely dead day, a day in which lounging was not only encouraged, it was downright mandatory. "Morning," Vince said.
"Hey,"
Herschel replied.
"Hi, Vince,"
Alice said. "Anything good on the tube?"
"Nah,"
Herschel said, changing the channel.
"Just some wildfires out in Western California that they're trying to get under control. Interesting story, but once you've seen one clip of trees on fire, you've kinda seen them all."
"Too bad," Vince said. "I know the HCP carnival thing doesn't start until around 6 tonight. I've been spending so much time training, I'm not sure how to kill a day off."
"Ooh, we could go into town and do some shopping,"
Alice suggested. Vince and Herschel stared at her, their eyes unblinking.
Screw you both. I'm a girl. I'm allowed to like shopping.
I'll give you that, Vince agreed. But we're boys. We're allowed to really not like it.
Would you rather we let Nick organize another movie gore-a-thon?
The lady makes a point, Herschel conceded. I'm scared we'll be seeing more than enough gore for my tastes tomorrow.
It won't be that bad. We had to fight each other at the beginning of the year, and there were matches all through the first semester. Not to mention we also had our daily sparring. I think the coaches have a good sense of what they're doing and won't let anyone get seriously hurt, Vince assured him.
That's easy for you to say. You're smart enough to quit when you can't win. That's a trait my alter ego lacks, Herschel said.
I think you give me too much credit, Vince said.
Oh, you'll both be fine, Alice snipped. Remember, you two have actual powers. I just float.
It served you pretty well in the semester final. You outlasted both of us, Vince pointed out.
Not to mention, it saved Nick's life on the mountain.
Ah, yes. What on earth was I thinking with that one?
Alice asked aloud. That we had a friend in need, Vince said, giving her a smile and plopping down in a chair near the couch.
It's kind of weird, though, you know? That I saved Nick?
No, I mean being here at the end of the year, Vince said.
Thinking back to how things were at the beginning, it feels like so much has changed.
True, Alice said.
I was terrified of living next to a telepath. Now Mary is a dear friend.
Roy was completely unmanageable. Now he's,
well, still pretty unmanageable, but at least he's motivated to put in effort, Herschel said.
I was so scared of my power I went into the initial test with nothing more than a single lighter's worth of energy, Vince said.
How much do you have now?
Herschel asked. About 2.5, Vince replied.
Oh yeah, the world is completely flipped on its head, Herschel chuckled.
Vince shrugged.
I'm just not one to take unnecessary risks.
So some things haven't changed, Alice said.
That's a bit reassuring.
Just weird to imagine. If this is how different things are after 1 year, imagine what it will be like after 4, Vince mused.
I think that's the entire point of the HCP. Bringing us from the supers we started as and radically changing us into heroes,
Herschel said.
Yeah, except for the whole starting as supers part of it,
Alice said.
We were supers when the school year started.
It counts, Herschel replied. Very true. And given how many years of practice everyone else had on us, it's amazing we've all hung on this long, Vince said.
I don't know. I think being powered for so long gave us an edge over the rest of them,
Herschel said.
And that is?
Alice asked.
We know what it's like to lose. We know what it's like to not be the cream of the crop, the top of the class. We've spent most of our lives considered pariahs, while they were hailed as demigods. Long story short, we had vastly more motivation to work for the hero title than the rest of them.
I can see that, Vince agreed, with a few exceptions. Shane is certainly one determined super.
Credit where it's due. Chad is a pretty relentless guy as well, Herschel admitted.
Yeah, what is that guy's deal?
Alice asked.
I mean, I rarely ever see him smile or laugh or do anything besides train.
He and Roy trained together for a while. I can't say for sure, but I got a strong impression that whatever his motivation is, it had something to do with his father,
Herschel said.
Who isn't at least a little messed up from their parents?
Alice said.
Anyway, gents, we've strayed from the main point of this conversation.
How different things are? Vince asked.
No, figuring out what the shit we're going to do until tonight, Alice said.
I have all my Dungeons and Dragons books,
Herschel volunteered softly.
Let's table that as Plan B,
Alice said. You have a Plan A? Vince asked.
Did you miss the whole let's go shopping thing?
Vince and Herschel groaned together.
We could get some of the others together and see what they think,
Herschel said. Alice shook her head.
They're as bad at this as we are. By then, Nick will be up and we'll all just go along with whatever asinine activity he pitches.
Someone call? Nick said, walking into the room. We were just going over our plans for the dead day, Vince said.
Oh, don't worry about that, Nick said. It turns out there is a Skull Splinter marathon at the Cineplex downtown. They start with the original Skull Splitter and go all the way through Skull Splitter 5, Daughter of Son of Skull Splitter.
Vince and Herschel cast glances at Alice, hoping against hope she had come up with some idea in the last 10 seconds that would deliver them from this terrible fate.
As much fun as that sounds, we've already come up with a way to burn the day,
Alice said.
Oh, did you? Nick asked.
Yep,
Alice confirmed.
Herschel, go get your books.
Really?
Alice looked at his excited face, then at Nick's cocky grin, then back at Herschel.
Really?
139.
Holy crap,
Alice said, her eyes taking in the full array of festivities. Mr. Transport had just dropped off the 5 Melbrook students in the central area underground, which wore a significantly different look than its usual cold stone veneer. Instead, there were bright colors hanging from the ceiling in the form of streamers. Large pictures of famous heroes had been hung along the walls, and several oversized signs directed the students to different locales within the area.
A midway?
Nick said, skeptically reading one such sign aloud.
I thought they were kidding about the games.
Evidently not,
Herschel said. He was dressed more nicely than usual, a collar on his shirt and slacks rather than jeans. The lovely girl whose hand he was holding, Mary, obviously, was also adorned in a slightly fancier fashion. The two of them had decided to treat this evening like a date night, since it was quite possibly the last one they would have before summer break. That was, of course, ignoring the possibility that one of them might not be invited back after the semester's end.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm supposed to meet Sasha in the dancing area, Vince said.
He was also wearing a collared shirt, though his pants were still of the blue jean persuasion.
Dancing, and I'm sure with a DJ no less, Nick sighed. So much for life after high school.
Actually, I think it's kind of nice,
Mary said.
A lot of us didn't get very normal high school experiences, being supers in a school full of humans. This is a good fill-in for some of the things we missed.
That's one way to look at it, Nick said. You go find your girl, Vince. I'm off to check out the games.
Count me in with you,
Alice said.
I'd be more comfortable throwing ping-pong balls at fish than huddling around a punch table.
What about you guys? Vince turned to Herschel and Mary.
I think we'll take the punch table,
Herschel said, not quite controlling his idiotic grin. He couldn't help himself. It was impossible not to be smile-happy when he had such a wonderful girl on his arm. Had Mary been listening to his thoughts, she would have blushed. Then again, had Mary been listening to many people's thoughts, things certainly would have played out very differently that night.
Okay, then, we'll catch up to you later, Vince said.
He gave Alice and Nick a perfunctory wave and headed off toward the gym, where the dance area was set up. Herschel and Mary followed suit, though not before Mary shot a sly, knowing look at Alice. The gym hardly seemed to be the same place as the temple of sweat and pain the students had toiled in throughout the year. Instead, there were a series of refreshment tables, paper lanterns hanging from the ceiling, and an impressive sound system woofing from the walls. This controlled noise was directed from a small booth near the corner, currently manned by a junior in a gray uniform. The occasional authority figure, be it Dean Blaine, Coach George, or an adult none of the freshmen recognized, dotted the landscape. They were experts at blending in, making their presence known only in the capacity that they existed, not in that they intended to interfere in the night's revelry. It was, in truth, a little overly high school for the maturity level of the attendees, but it resonated with many just the same, and the overall spirit could be described as boisterous. One such cheerful soul was Vince, as he scooped Sasha up into a spinning hug, the outer layer of her bright pink skirt, it matched the tips of her hair, sent twirling about behind her. They kissed briefly, and Vince set her back to the ground. The music was loud enough that talking was possible, if a bit uncomfortable. Fortunately, Vince and Sasha had little to say that required words. They looked into each other's eyes as her feet made contact with the floor, and she kissed him again. This one was less brief. It didn't take long before the rest of their friends had clustered around them. Will, Jill, Stella, Violet, and Thomas seemed to have all come as a singular unit. Alex surprised everyone, introducing them to his date for the evening, Selena. Her caramel skin looked all the deeper against the deep green of her dress, and her long hair had been styled up expertly, with just a few wisps left hanging down. Vince gave his friend a questioning look, which was met with a shrug and a smile, as if to say,
"Beats me how I pulled it off."
Vince laughed and squeezed the hand of his own date. The group stayed clustered for only a short while before giving in to the inevitable expression of high spirits and close friends. They found their way to the dance floor and began to make utter fools of themselves. Limbs thrashed about, rhythm became a poor, downtrodden concept, and endorphins surged through their veins. In the shadows, their supervisors smiled. Despite the harsh nature of the program, those selected to teach the HCP genuinely enjoyed the education process. One perk of that process was this time every year, when they got to see the young, happy sides of their charges, not the hardened warriors they were sculpting them into. It was both rewarding and heartbreaking, because each teacher knew that most would lose the ability to act so carefree, probably by this time next year. Another set of eyes watched the dancers, though these were not filled with such kind-hearted sentiments. No, these eyes were calculating and hard, but nearly brimming over with excitement. These eyes told the story of retribution, long denied, that was on the cusp of being unfurled. For the moment, all they did was watch. This moment had been so long in the making that there was no need to rush. It needed to be perfect, because the owner of those eyes had a feeling he would be savoring it for years to come. 140. The various classrooms that dotted the underground area had been filled with carnival-style games of chance, for the delight of those who considered themselves too refined for such frivolity as dancing. The music from the gym could still be heard, thanks to a well-connected, but thankfully low-in-volume, PA system with speakers at each corner. Gray-uniformed middle-classmen were tasked with manning the various booths, serving as free labor as well as a control should some of the youngsters get rowdy. "This is ultra-lame," Nick complained as he and Alice meandered the halls. "I mean, seriously, dart throwing? Haven't we all spent, like, the past couple of months training in ranged combat?"
"I think it's quaint," Alice disagreed. "It's a reminder of the normal world. It's easy to get so caught up in all this that you forget what it's like for the rest of the humans. Or the rest of the supers, for that matter. I have trouble remembering a time when the HCP didn't seem to dominate a majority of my life. This is a pleasant break."
"Yeah, except that for some people, that break might be a bit more permanent than they'd like," Nick said. Alice looked at him, trying in vain to see past the sunglasses into the eyes that lurked behind them.
"Worried?"
"Just aware. Not everyone makes the cut, and I'm not exactly a ranked combatant. There's nothing wrong with a little focus."
"A little focus my butt," Alice said. "This from the guy who spent the entire 2 weeks of training watching television on the couch."
"It was part of my training regimen," Nick replied.
"Only if you're training for a bad sitcom trivia game show."
"And the lady has uncovered my backup plan if the HCP doesn't work out."
"Uh-huh. Whatever you say there, Slick," Alice huffed. "I'm sure you have some secret scheme to slide through these tests with a passing grade. In the meantime, there's a more pressing matter facing you."
"What's that?" Alice pointed at a game some yards down the hall.
"They have giant bears, and you are going to win one for me."
"Why would I do that?"
"Because I'm not above guilting you into dancing with me and then stomping on your feet all night."
Nick sighed. "A bear for the lady it is, then." As time slipped by, the group dancing gave way to the inevitable coupling up of partners. Vince and Sasha were the first to slip off, followed not long after by Alex and Selena, then Herschel and Mary. Thomas did double duty, switching between Violet and Stella as dance partner at their whims. Stella would never admit it, but she, along with several other girls, wished it was Roy making an appearance tonight instead of Herschel. They were hard out of luck, though, because with all the training and prep work Roy had been putting in for the test, it had been no contest giving this night over to Herschel. Besides, Mary had been very adamant that she get to spend the night with the boy she was actually dating, and the wagers of their bet still held effect for the next 2 days. Herschel noticed Alice and Nick wandering into the gym area, Alice clutching an oversized plush bear, as he and Mary stepped into the hallway to get a little space. This is where several of the games had been set up. However, there were also several classrooms left open, presumably for the purpose of those who wanted to get away from the racket for a while. It was in one of these that the duo found themselves resting after the better part of the hour they had spent kicking up the dance floor.
"Whew,"
Mary said as she plopped down.
"I have no idea how some girls do that in heels."
"Practice?"
Herschel ventured.
"I'd rather do a Coach George workout than practice that,"
Mary said, shaking her head.
"No question about it. I'm a flats girl."
"I didn't know that point had ever come up for debate," Herschel said.
"It hasn't. I'm just putting it out there preemptively, lest you expect me to start donning pumps on special occasions."
"So, you see us celebrating special occasions together then, I take it?"
"Well, yeah,"
Mary said. Her eyes fluttered downward, and an unfamiliar blush crept into her cheeks.
I mean, you and I are sort of... Well, I mean, you're my boyfriend, aren't you?
I'd hoped so, but I never really wanted to press the issue,
Herschel admitted, a tomato coloration rising in his own face. Mary tittered nervously.
You and I aren't very good at this, are we?
Doesn't look that way, Herschel agreed. I mean, we've been dating for a few months now, and I'm really enjoying it.
As am I.
And there isn't really anyone else I want to be dating.
I'll second that motion as well,
Mary said.
Then yes, I think we are, in fact, in a relationship.
You certain? I bet we can get a second opinion,
Mary offered.
Nope, no need. I'm calling it officially. I am your boyfriend, and vice versa,
Herschel declared.
Well, when you say it with so much confidence, I don't know how I can refuse.
The two had scooted closer during the conversation. Now, they were locked into each other's eyes, idiotic smiles splitting their faces, and a slow twitch of nerves jerking through their skin.
We are ridiculous, Herschel said.
But adorable,
Mary tacked on. They leaned in and kissed, their first one since taking the next step forward in their relationship. It was familiar, scary, awkward, and overrun with joy. It, along with the sharp crackle of electricity, was also their last conscious memory for the next several hours.
"Where'd the happy couple go to?" Nick asked, as the music dimmed in volume.
The DJ could be seen evacuating his booth in pursuit of a bathroom and a fresh water bottle, so dancing was tabled for the duration of his break.
"Off, away from all these prying eyes," Sasha theorized. "A sentiment I can get behind, if you know what I mean."
In case anyone didn't know what she meant, Sasha took the opportunity to slap Vince firmly on the ass.
"I'm sure they just wanted to talk in private," Vince said, eyes darting about as he searched inwardly for any strategy to hide his fresh embarrassment.
Sadly, he found no such method. Vince had always been cursed with wearing the truth on his face.
"On that note, though, Alex and Selena seem to have left, too," Thomas pointed out.
"I saw her slip out with him a few songs ago," Violet said. "I'm going to go out on a limb and say they were definitely not just heading out to talk."
"Alex and Selena, huh? When, and more importantly, how did that happen?" Nick asked.
There was a collective shrug.
"They hung out a lot during the river trip," Stella said. "I guess they found a connection."
"Huh. Kudos to him. That girl is crazy hot. A toast to our buddy, scoring some out-of-his-league tale," Nick said, snatching up a few punch glasses from the table and handing them out.
"How about we just cheers to a great year instead?" Vince offered.
"Whatever," Nick said by way of agreement.
The friends clinked glasses and downed the cherry-flavored drink. A crackle from overhead indicated the DJ booth speaker was about to be used.
"I'm sorry to interrupt your fun," said a new voice, half-strangled with its own excitement. "However, I've recently discovered some information that the entire HCP needs to be alerted to."
Nick felt the muscles in his lower back tense immediately.
"I just thought it should be known that, despite what they have told us, the entire Melbrook populace, Nicholas Campbell, Alice Adair,
Herschel Daniels, Mary Smith, and Vince Reynolds are not supers. They're all powereds. And I have proof.
141.
Sounds like somebody spiked their own punch, Nick quipped. Attitude cavalier and brain slammed into overdrive. His eyes swept the room at a fevered pace, thankfully hidden by the tinted frames as he assessed their situation. Despite what years of television had conditioned one to believe, the shocking announcement was not met with immediate riots. It was instead greeted with confusion, as uncertainty rippled through the crowd. Some of the students were looking at the DJ booth, trying to figure out who had broken in to make such a strange declaration. Others were talking amongst themselves, likely trying to figure out who all those names belonged to. The Melbrook students did, after all, only account for a small segment of the freshman class, so they were not household names. It seemed some of the adults were making beelines for the booth, no doubt in an attempt to find out exactly what was going on and regain control of it. All of which were factors Nick could have handled. The problem was, as it often is, with the people they had counted as friends. Thomas, Stella, Violet, Will, and Jill were all staring at him, Alice, and Vince. Sasha was still holding her boyfriend's hand, though her body language made it clear she was uncertain how to feel about such a strange declaration.
"No kidding," Alice said. "I mean, I know stress is high, but that seems like a strange prank to try and pull."
Nick could have kissed that girl. She might not have been the world's best liar, but growing up around businessmen and diplomats had given her some acumen. Not to mention, she was smart enough to follow the leader when the time was right.
"That does seem strange," Sasha said. "Right, Vince?"
12 years ago, a Vegas paper called The Strip Beat ran a story about the collapse of a local restaurant, the cause of which was ultimately determined to be a young powered boy by the name of Nicholas Campbell," the voice said over the crackling PA system.
"Sure, he can claim a fake news story, but did he go to the trouble of making a fake paper as well? You know, that's where the quality of a prank is determined, in the details," Nick said.
"Aren't you from Vegas, though?" Thomas asked.
"A fact that is readily available to anyone in our class," Nick replied.
"This is really stupid, isn't it, Vince?" Sasha asked again.
3 years ago, there was a police report filed against a powered named Roy Daniels for underage drinking and destruction of property," the voice continued. 8 years ago, there was a search ordered for a powered named Alice Adair, who floated out of her home's garden on a spring afternoon. And then there are the literally dozens of reports of a young, silver-haired, homeless child shorting out and inadvertently destroying thousands of dollars in property across the country. All of which I have documentation of, along with the locations of the original sources, in the booth with me."
The tide of the crowd was turning. While initially they'd been waiting for a punchline to the gag, it was becoming evident that whoever had hijacked the booth intended to be taken seriously. That shifted the tone of the announcement greatly. Nick noticed more and more stares turning toward him and his dorm mates as identification was made and skepticism gave way to suspicion.
"While I enjoy a good witch hunt as much as the next guy, it is a lot less fun when you're the one with a wart on your nose. Maybe we'd best take our leave until they settle that joker down," Nick said, scanning the room for the nearest exit back to the lifts.
"No, there's no need for you guys to go,"
Thomas said.
Just because someone is making baseless accusations doesn't mean it should ruin our night.
That's right. Some guy is just being an asshole. There's no way you guys could have lied to us all year. Right, Vince?
This time, Sasha was practically pleading, her months spent with Vince allowing her to see the truth in his face and his silence before the others noticed. While Nick and Alice might be playing it off well, the guilt of having lived a falsehood for so long had suddenly crashed down upon Vince's shoulders. His face was a tapestry of shame. As Nick looked at his friend, the strategy immediately changed. There was no chance for damage control. The only course of action now was an immediate exit.
I'm sorry,
Vince said softly, his eyes drawn to the floor rather than face Stella.
Alice, get the hell out of here,
Nick whispered.
What about Herschel and Mary?
The whole place is wired for sound. I'm sure they heard our outing. Plus, Mary is a telepath, so if she's listening to any of us, she'll know we're making tracks.
Nick assured her.
Now hurry your ass up. Vince and I will be right behind you.
Without another word, Alice slunk off through the crowd, the giant, stuffed bear acting as a buoy to mark her location. Nick stepped forward and wrapped his hand around Vince's arm.
Come on, buddy. I think we should get out of here while the air gets cleared. We don't want anything bad to happen over some silly misunderstanding.
What do you mean, you're sorry?
Sasha asked, pulling her hand free of Vince's clasp.
I mean, I never meant to lie to you, Sasha,
Vince said. Though the words were meant only for her, the meaning was not lost on the rest of their friends. Nick saw shock, then uncertainty ripple through their faces. He knew it was only a short jump before that turned into anger and betrayal, so he dug his fingernails into Vince's arm and pulled him close.
Vince, if you have ever trusted in me or our friendship at all, then for the love of shit, come with me right fucking now,
Nick said, abandoning all pretense and dragging his friend toward the exit.
What about the others? All taken care of. They'll meet us at the dorm,
Nick told him.
I meant our friends and classmates.
Nick sucked in a tight breath through his teeth.
Vince, if we stay here, I can just about promise you we won't have any of those left when they're done with us. We need to regroup in a safe place. Now stop dragging your fucking feet and hustle.
You're sure this is the right move?
Vince's big blues were wide and scared. The kid might be hell in a fight, but he didn't know how to deal with things like subterfuge and discovery. He needed guidance, and he was trusting Nick to provide it to him, to put him on the right path in this time of tribulation.
Absolutely. Things will be fine,
Nick lied.
But we can't be here when they find out that guy is telling the truth and the room hits a fever pitch. We get safe, we let things cool off, and we fix whatever is still broken when the dust settles.
Okay, Vince said with a nod, finally picking up the pace as he and Nick cleared an exit at the south end of the room. Once they were out of the gym, they broke into a flat-out sprint down the halls until they hit the lifts. Alice was already in place, and as soon as they crossed the threshold, she flipped the switch, sending them slowly back upward to the real world.
142. Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport were enjoying a quiet cup of tea in the kitchen when they heard the front door slam open loudly. They exchanged a wary glance, and Mr. Numbers tensed momentarily as a flood of possible attack scenarios played out in his head. Their concern was, briefly, alleviated when the voices of their charges reached their location.
That reprieve lasted only until they ascertained the context of said discussion.
"Didn't you see their faces? They aren't going to forgive us,"
Alice's voice declared from the living room.
"They're our friends. They'll understand why we had to keep it a secret,"
Vince disagreed.
"Forgive us? Are you two joking or just playing dumb?"
Nick berated.
"Do you not realize the full scope of what this outing means? Forget feelings of betrayal from our friends. That shit is nothing. We're powers that have become and functioned as supers in the HCP for an entire school year. Our existence challenges everything they know about the distinction between supers and powers. Trust me, when that realization really sets in, we're looking at a lot of trouble. I'll be amazed if they don't have this house burned down by morning."
Mr. Transport's eyes had grown larger throughout Nick's tirade. By the time it ended, his eyes could have passed as twins to the saucer currently resting under his teacup. He and Mr. Numbers exchanged another look, this time fully aware of the situation and taking up their respective roles for how to deal with it. Mr. Numbers made an immediate exit into their room, shutting the door firmly behind him. Mr. Transport took one last sip of his tea and stepped out into the living room.
"It won't be that bad," Alice said. "I mean, what do they care if powers can get control of their abilities? It doesn't stop all the supers from having theirs."
"Alice, there are about nearly double the number of powers in the world as there are supers. Powers who have spent their whole lives being looked down on, belittled, and treated as second-class citizens. Powers who, for all they know, will be turning into supers with a pretty justified grudge by year's end. How do you see that playing out? Because I promise you, they're assuming the worst-case scenario," Nick said.
"But that's not going to happen," Vince pointed out. "We're the only ones."
"What's true doesn't matter. Only what they're afraid of is relevant," Nick replied.
"I'm afraid Nick has a point," Mr. Transport said.
"They're going to burn the house down?"
Vince asked.
"Not necessarily, but he is correct in that things will be getting worse before they get better,"
Mr. Transport clarified.
"This revelation will need to be handled carefully, and the public delicately managed. They will make peace with it, though. Eventually."
"What can we do to help?" Vince asked, taking a step forward.
"At the moment, with things as uncertain as they are, the only thing we need from you is to stay safe. I'll be extracting you all to a safe location once Mr. Numbers determines the optimum place for us to use,"
Mr. Transport said.
"Wait, you don't already know where we're going?"
Alice asked, a new flavor of fear pungent in her voice.
"No, but I assure you it will only take us a short while to make the determination,"
Mr. Transport said.
"Yeah, that's great, but if you don't know where you're taking us, then I'm guessing you didn't already take Herschel and Mary there,"
Alice said.
"That would be a correct guess,"
Mr. Transport agreed.
"Then where are they?"
Alice asked.
"We got slowed down by worming through all the people out celebrating the end of finals on campus. Crowds Mary could detect and avoid with her telepathy. They should have easily beaten us here, but they didn't. So where are they?"
"Excuse me,"
said a new voice, one soft and female.
"The door was open, so I..."
Mr. Transport and the three students whirled on their feet at the intruder, only to find one of the HCP freshman girls looking awkward in the doorway.
"I'm sorry, young lady, but this is not an opportune time for visiting,"
Mr. Transport said briskly.
"I know. I mean, obviously. I mean, I was underground and everything and heard the announcement,"
she said.
"But there's something I really need to tell you guys."
Nick gave her a brief nod.
"Then you better say it quick, because I think this place is going to empty pretty soon."
"Right. So, my name is Agatha, and I'm in class with you guys,"
Agatha said.
But I mean, you knew that. I'm the only animator in our year. Anyway, I know none of us really hang out or talk or anything, but over spring break, Mary helped me out when I was stuck in the library, so I know she's a really nice girl, and I guess we're kind of friends. Tonight, I was using my power to just sort of eavesdrop on everyone with some folded paper figures.
Not to be rude, but I trust there's a point coming around the bend, Nick said.
There is. I had one hanging out in an empty classroom when Herschel and Mary walked in. I was going to have him leave, but then they started talking, and it was really sweet, so I kept listening in. And that's why my creation was still around to see what happened,
Agatha said. She took in a deep breath and stared miserably at the floor. She wasn't one for speaking to groups of people, and this was going to be the hardest part to tell.
They were knocked out and taken.
They were what? Vince yelled, his back jerking straight as a flagpole and his hands curling into fists. What? No, 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 that's crazy, Alice said, aggressive denial setting in. I don't believe it. This is a horrible joke to play on tonight of all nights. Both of you shut up, Nick said, not quite raising his voice to a yell, but projecting loud enough to overwhelm them both. He stepped toward Agatha, taking in every last detail about the girl. The angle of her eyes, the position of her feet, the wrinkling around her eyebrow. Not one piece of it escaped Nick's focus. This was unfortunate, because it all pointed to a single conclusion.
She's telling the truth, Nick announced. But there's something I don't understand. Herschel might be powerless in his normal form, but Mary is a juggernaut. Who could have subdued both of them without causing a ruckus, and then slipped them out of the gym?
Agatha somehow managed to look even more uncomfortable as she squirmed in place.
That's why I came to tell you all, instead of getting a professor or the dean,
she said.
I'm really hoping there's a logical explanation for this, but just in case there isn't, I thought you should know.
Tell us who took them, Vince said. The initial panic had passed from his voice. What remained was a tone that was flat as a blade and just as sharp. Agatha licked her lips and tried to remember the kind act of the girl she was worried about. There probably was a good reason for what she had seen, but as she remembered Mary's unconscious body being tossed over that man's shoulder so unceremoniously, she couldn't think of a single one that would fully explain the situation.
The people who took them, it was the coaches, George and Persephone.
143.
This is ridiculous, Alice said, shaking her head. We're really going to believe a crazy story given to us by some girl we've never even talked to?
She was telling the truth, Nick reiterated. He used the past tense because, after her revelation, Agatha had quickly excused herself. In her defense, the room had reacted somewhat less than calmly to such an accusation, and only now was reason reasserting its dominance.
That doesn't mean she really saw what she thinks she saw, it just means she believes it.
Then maybe she made a mistake, Alice said hopefully. Maybe Herschel and Mary just went somewhere on their own.
And turned off their phones? Vince asked.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to be interrupted,
Alice said, clinging desperately to the hope of her fantasy.
I'm afraid we have to assume the girl was right, Mr. Numbers said, walking into the room and joining the conversation.
You heard what happened? Vince asked. Before Mr. Numbers could bother coming up with an explanation, Nick beat him to it with the truth.
They constructed this whole place to monitor us, Vince. Obviously the room is bugged.
Correct, but hardly the most pressing matter at the moment,
Mr. Numbers said, ending the conversation on ethics before it could even begin. Though normally such a discovery would undoubtedly hurt the goodwill his charges held toward him and Mr. Transport, at present Mr. Numbers would rank that as a non-concern.
Herschel and